Hello everyone, this is Ian welcoming you to the first 2005 edition of the Angus Newshound, a collection of news items gathered mainly from the Angus County Press and read as usual by our volunteers here at Angus Talking Newspaper. I hope you all had a good Christmas and a pleasant Hogmanay, and all of us here at Angus Talking Newspapers send you our best wishes for the coming year. Looking back to the year just passed, we have to apologise for the fact that there was no Talking Newspaper in December. I was taken ill just before we were due to record, so we reluctantly had to cancel. We hope this is the last time this will happen, as we now have a new volunteer to help with the recording. Her name is Stacey, and hopefully next month you will get a rest from my voice, as the plan is that she will be editing and introducing February's edition. Back to the present this month, January 2025. We start with Jean reading from the paper of the Christmas week, followed by Leslie reading from the edition of the 2nd of January, and then finishing with Sheila reading selections from the most recent edition, that of the 9th of January. After that, there are a couple of extras this month. The first is an informative article about macular disease, one of the biggest causes of sight loss. This article discusses the different types of macular problems and the help and support available for people affected. There is also an overview of some of the latest research underway to treat macular problems and slow their advance. The second extra is a guide to TV licences. With the cost of a TV licence increasing in April this year, now is the time to check whether you might qualify for a discount or even a free licence. This article outlines who can qualify for a reduction on the cost of a TV licence and comes as usual from the Talking News Federation. All of that is on the CD version, but if you listen via USB, there is a further, third extra. In this month, when Donald Trump begins his second presidency of the United States, you can listen to our old friend Liz describing the life and times of Betty Ford, the wife of Gerald Ford, who was president in the 1970s. I hope you find these articles and our selection of news from Angus of interest. And before I go, as usual, can I appeal to all of you, please be sure to return the yellow pochette you received this recording in. And also, please return the USB stick if that is how you listen to it. If you have received the CD, there is no need to return it, but please do return the pochette. All you need to do is reverse the label on the pochette and get it posted. There is no need for a stamp. So goodbye till next time, and for now, here is Jean to start us off with her selection of news from around Christmas.
Hello, this is Jean, and I'm reading from the Angus County Press, dated Thursday, December the 26th. 2024. The headlines: £165,000 for climate hub. Angus is one of the areas across Scotland being supported to take climate action, thanks to the realisation of a nationwide network of climate action hubs. The Angus organisation is one of a total of 24 hubs that have been set up across the country, fulfilling 2024 programme for government commitment. Their aim is to help empower people to act in their neighbourhoods, and have supported a range of projects, including those linked to local energy generation, flooding, migration and food growing. A total of £5.5 million has been allocated in 2024-25 for climate action hubs, alongside support package for delivery. Of that, the Angus hub has been granted £165,000 to continue its work in the country. The Angus Climate Hub was formed in 2023 to help local communities understand and act for people and nature across Angus. Its remit covers several areas, including nature, food, energy and travel. Since then, it has assisted more than 20 projects across these categories through its Change for Good Fund, including Sustainable Kerrymuir, Kerrymuir Food Hub, and the Galloshade Community Links Garden in Forfar. In Arbroath, a free food initiative using an area of Springfield Park used historically by the Abbey's monks to grow the Oslin apple, the Arbroath pippin, around 700 years ago, and from which the Arbroath Pippins group takes its name. The work of the Merton Trust near Forfar and Land Times Sea Film Festival held in Montrose have also benefited from the funding. Among its current initiatives is the Angus Community Energy Project, which is investigating how street lights, no longer supported by Angus Council, can be kept operational. And ScotRail. ScotRail staff have come together this Christmas to donate an incredible 153 gifts to Age Scotland's Big Gift Appeal, bringing joy and support to older people across the country. Dozens of thoughtful gifts have been distributed to older people supported by Age Scotland, helping to combat loneliness and reminding them that they are valued and not alone. A beautiful picture here of Marine House in Montrose. Angus councillors have allowed a Montrose Airbnb to continue operating despite concerns from neighbouring residents. An application was lodged with the local authority in September last year, seeking a permission to continue operating 14 Marine House as short-term let. Despite concerns, council officers recommended the application be approved, a stance the committee agreed with. Convener David Cheap said it will provide additional tourism accommodation in Montrose. There is no evidence to demonstrate the loss of a single dwelling house will have material impact on housing supply. I think the impact is very limited as well. The application was unanimously approved. Two holiday pods planned for Angus farmland. An application has been lodged for two holiday pods on Angus farmland. The scheme is part of farm diversification at New Mill of Castleton, which sits close to Easy between Glams and Meagle. If the plans, which have been lodged with Angus Council, are approved, the pods would be built on land beside the existing farmhouse and would accommodate up to three guests on short stays. Angus Council will determine the application in due course. Film treats for the guides. Guides from Monifieth recently enjoyed a trip to their local Odeon cinema recently to see Disney's latest animated adventure film, Mona 2, at an exclusive screening for the Girl Guiding members. Members of the second Monifieth Guide unit joined over 50,000 Girl Guiding members at 99 Odeon cinemas across the UK who took part in the mass film screening events. And plans to make memories over Twixmas. The days between Christmas and New Year, often referred to as Twixmas, easily blur into one, leaving many struggling to remember what day it is. Visit Scotland has put together a guide featuring 10 festive activities ranging from cosy moments away from the cold, outdoor adventures to shake off the post-Christmas haze and fun-filled outings. Dundee Christmas Village is the perfect place to celebrate the magic of Twixmas. With its vibrant atmosphere, you'll find everything from real ice rink and a fun fair to market stalls, all illuminated with dazzling lights and effects, open daily from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. up to January the 5th. Dundee Christmas Village is free to attend. And for those seeking adventure and adrenaline boost, a Husky sled ride is ideal. Husky Haven in Aberdeenshire offers a one-of-a-lifetime experience. Guests can take part in hands-on treks where they will have the chance to drive their own dog team along scenic trails in a standing sled. It is really Christmas. Is it really Christmas without attending a panto? Check out Beauty and the Beast in the Byre Theatre in St Andrews or Mother Goose Perth Theatre, another treat worth checking out. And help for families. Children First is urging families in Angus to call their support line for free expert advice on money worries, energy costs and other financial challenges this winter ahead of increasing bills in January. Families worried about their finances can find energy saving tips and money advice at childrenfirst.org.uk or by calling the Children First support line on 08 000 28 22 33. The number again, 08 000 28 22 33. The team can support you to apply for Warm Home Discount, which is a great way to reduce your energy costs, even taking small steps like closing the curtains at night, layering clothing to keep warm, turning appliances off at the socket, and boiling just the amount of water needed can all help reduce bills. And one of the top tips is to take your meter readings by the end of December to ensure the bill is accurate before the price increases. The East of Scotland Royal Marines Association recently made a special presentation to one of its Arbroath stalwart members. Malcolm Davies was given a thank you letter and a silver engraved pocket watch in recognition for his years of work. Malcolm has been a champion fundraiser for the East of Scotland branch of the RMA and, as their fundraising rep, has organised a host of activities, including bucket collections at various supermarkets, football matches, which have raised thousands of pounds for Royal Marine charities. March the 30th, he will begin his walk around Scotland. This yomp, as it's known to the Marines, will take him several months. But Malcolm is looking forward to the adventure of the walk and meeting new people on the way. His former comrades from the Marines will give him a proper send-off as he begins his trip. And some of those former serving Marines will also escort him as far as Carnoustie. If you see Malcolm on his walk, give him a toot on the car horn and give him a wave. He will depart from Tesco Car Park 9:30 a.m. March the 30th. On this occasion, he's hoping to raise £20,000 for the Scottish Mountain Rescue Service and the Scottish Charity Air Ambulance. And we go to the rural members. Mary Kirk first. Mary Kirk SWI, who meet at the Georgia Tillman Trows. They met for their Christmas meal, and after a lovely meal, we then played a Christmas-themed game of charades, organised by Mary Thompson, which was great fun. An enjoyable evening ended with a secret Santa gift for everyone. President Aileen Weir thanked the restaurant staff for a lovely meal and wished us all a Merry Christmas and look forward to seeing us. Next meeting, January the 16th, 2025. From there to North Muir, WRI, Elma Dickens welcomed everyone for their Christmas lunch at the Thrums Hotel. We were served a delicious meal, which was much enjoyed. Carol singing followed, and then Santa Sack came round with a present for all. The next meeting is January the 21st, 2025, in the Parish Church Hall at 2 p.m. when the speaker will be Jim Smith. Montrose Football Academy fundraiser. And there's a picture of Jimmy Bullard appearing, or as he will appear, at the Whitehall Theatre in Dundee on Fr- Friday, February the 28th. Former footballer Jimmy Bullard will appear on stage in Dundee next year to help boost Montrose FC's Academy for Young Players. The Bulldog will be joined by Scottish actor, wrestler and radio presenter Grandy as he shares his football journey from renowned footballer to television personality before answering questions from the audience. Jimmy Bullard live with Grado will be held at Dundee's Whitehall Theatre Friday, February the 28th, promises to be an unforgettable evening of entertainment. Headline, 10 million bill racked up from train fare evasion. ScotRail is clamping down on people who deliberately try to avoid paying the correct fare for their journey. The train operator is taking further steps to tackle ticket fraud through a series of initiatives which aim to minimise ticketless travel and safeguard public money. From this month, an extra 69 ticket examiners will be in post, which will make it even more difficult for potential fraudsters to avoid paying the correct fare. It is estimated that around 10 million of public money is lost each year in fare evasion and fraud on ScotRail services, public funds that could otherwise be reinvested to improve services. Technology advancements allow ScotRail to combine frontline staff reports with data such as sales records and historical ticket usage to detect. It's not that, it's to detect fraud. In cases where fraud is identified, ScotRail calculates the total unpaid fare owed. In the past year, it has recouped £25,000 from people caught travelling fraudulently. And the winter vomiting bug. NHS 24 has issued advice about how to cope with the norovirus, also known as the winter vomiting bug. After an increase in calls to the 111 service from people suffering from symptoms. Norovirus is a stomach bug that causes vomiting and diarrhoea. It can be very unpleasant, but usually goes away in about 2 days. Symptoms include feeling sick, diarrhoea and vomiting. It can also give you a high temperature, headache and aching arms and legs. You don't usually need to get medical advice unless there's a risk of more serious problem. You can alleviate fever or aches and pains with paracetamol and try to get plenty of rest. If you or someone you're taking care of has signs of dehydration, like a dry mouth, dark urine, use rehydration drinks, which you can get from the pharmacy. And a Tina Turner tribute. The UK top Tina Turner tribute act will be shaking a tail feather at Dundee's Whitehall Theatre next month when she brings her hit show to the city. Justine Riddick and her talented cast have been wowing audiences and critics up and down the country with their show Totally Tina. Tickets for the show on January the 30th, 2025 are available from the box office by telephoning 01382 322 684. The number 01382 322 684. Participants of Football Memories groups across Scotland will hear from former referees on a whistle-stop tour of the country. Special tour got underway at Borough Briggs home of Elgin City, where ex-whistler Bill Mochrie was joined by former Scotland captain Colin Hendry. Football Memories Scotland is a charitable project run by the Scottish Football Museum in partnership with Alzheimer Scotland. With more than 600 groups around the country, Football Memories uses engaging football-themed resources in a memory box to stir memories and discussions led by volunteers. Alarnskirk driver Colin Ogilvie somewhat modestly described a trophy laden 2024 as a really good season. Ogilvie dominated in his Pro Stock Basic to win the GMP National Point title, as well picking up the Scottish Championship, the Highland Championship and the Munster Trophy. He says his car is prepared for the 2025, so has turned his attention to helping his children. He said, "My car is sitting there ready to go, and just now we're concentrating on building a new saloon for my son, Keelan. My other son, Caden, is champing at the bit to start racing, so we're not sure on what the plans for 2025 will be. The only trophy I need for the full set is the Turner Trophy, and I would like to defend the Scottish at least. But we will see what happens. All the work on my Pro Stock Basic is done by Caelan, Keaton and myself. So I would like to thank my sons and my sponsors for their help. It's greatly appreciated." And football. Brechin City went into Christmas with their lead at the top of the Highland League cut to just 2 points following a 1-1 draw at home to Fraserburgh. Our Grove, they extended their lead at the top of League One to 2 points with a 4-0 win away to Annan Athletic. Meanwhile, Montrose just lost 2-1 at home to the league's bottom side, Dumbarton, as they slip down to 6th place in the table. Forfar Athletic's mini revival in League 2 came to an end as they lost 2-0 away to Clyde, with goals from Jordan Allen and Martin Rennie. And curler Faye Henderson paid tribute to her former coach David Aitken after he was recognised for his work as the architect of British Curling's development strategy. Aitken, who retired from British Curling earlier this year, became the inaugural winner of the Pathway Coach Award at the PLX Awards, UK Sports Annual Conference for leaders from the high performance community. Faye said that winning the World Juniors with David as coach, as head coach, is my most special memory of working with him, but I have also travelled other championships with him and he has a great personality for coaching, which is why he has inspired many juniors to reach their full potential in curling. And finally, Forfar driver David Mitchell has won the coveted annual Simonson Award, the British GT's highest non-championship trophy for the second time. In doing so, he becomes not only the second driver to receive the twice, but all 24 years the youngest. Mitchell received the trophy at a glittering awards ceremony in Paris, which celebrated all the SRO title winners around the globe. And there's a picture, a very proud Sandy Mitchell, being the youngest two-time winner of the Alan Simonson Award. Wonderful. Thank you, and I wish you all a very happy 2025.
Hello, this is Leslie reading for the Angus County Press, Thursday, January 2nd. Happy New Year, everybody. And on the front page is a really good picture of an event that took place just on Christmas Eve. And the headline is Record for Tractor Run. An annual festive tractor run through Forfar and Kirriemuir has raised a record amount for charity after attracting its biggest ever entry. The streets of Kirriemuir and Forfar came alive on Christmas Eve with as 201 tractors and agricultural vehicles took part in the Forfar and District JAC's Christmas Eve tractor run, raising an incredible £10,000 for the Angus Toy Appeal and Forfar JAC. Stuart Burnett was awarded first prize for best decorated yoke with his imaginative fireplace-inspired decoration, a standout among a field of impressively adorned vehicles. Guild Homes played a significant role in supporting the cause, donating £1,000 towards the appeal. The route ended at the Old Four for Mart, hosted by A.M. Philip, who generously allowed the venue to return to its agricultural roots for the last time, providing a fitting finale to a fantastic day. Chairman Robbie Wills praised the committee for their hard work and dedication, saying, "This year's tractor run has been the biggest and best yet. It's a testament to the amazing work done by our committee, who have poured so much effort into organising the event." Robbie added, "Seeing the streets packed with people all coming together to support our community and spread some festive cheer is truly heartwarming. We're incredibly proud to have raised such a significant amount for these fantastic causes." Glenn Barclay, 4-4 JSC secretary and lead organiser of the event, reflected on the growing success of the tractor run and the response from the local community in helping to raise the money. He said, "The support has been phenomenal. Every year this event goes from strength to strength, and thanks to everybody for their teamwork and support. We set out to create something special for the town, and the response has been overwhelming. Raising £10,000 is a milestone achievement, and we're already looking forward to next year to build on this success and meet everyone's expectations. Just thanks to the whole community." And there are one or two pictures of tractors adorned in festive lights, and the collectors looking very happy too. Next item, check for charities. Members of 45 Commando veterans gathered at for a Christmas dinner at Arbroath Townhouse Hotel just before the big day. While at the dinner, local woman Frances Doherty presented the group with a cheque for £1,135. Fran, together with John Spratt, had previously held a successful evening of mediumship at the Royal British Legion. And Stuart Lavery, chairman of 45 Commando veterans, thanked Frances and said the money would be shared between local charities and homeless veterans. The organisation's aims include furthering ensuring former servicemen and their family receive the help to which they are entitled. And there's a picture of some of the veterans and the cheque being handed over. Next item is about an MP's visit to war graves. And again, there's a photograph of Stephen Gethings, MP, with Elaine Edwards at the Western Cemetery on in Arbroath. Local MP Stephen Gethings recently visited Arbroath Western Cemetery to find out more about the work of the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. The organisation exists to ensure those who died in service or as a result of conflict are commemorated so that the individual and the human cost of war are remembered. Invited by the Commission, the Arbroath and Broughty Ferry MP met with Elaine Edwards, Public Engagement Coordinator, who introduced him to its work and showed him the graves that they look after. There are 62 identified war graves in the cemetery, among which is the grave of Helena Stewart Bennett, who was a staff nurse in Queen Alexandra's Imperial Military Nursing Service. Helena, born in Arbroath in 1888, died on October 18th, 1911, age 30, just 24 days before the armistice was signed. She trained as a nurse at Edinburgh Royal Infirmary before serving with Queen Alexandra's Imperial Military Nursing Service. Another headstone in Western Cemetery belongs to Pilot Officer Patrick Constable Fraser, who died at the age of 20 in an aircraft accident in England in 1939. Mr. Gethings said, "It's vitally important that those who died in service to their country are remembered in the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, and they do an outstanding job in ensuring that this is done." Next step in golf plans. Angus could be just weeks away from a major shake-up of the Carnoustie Golf Links. The proposed changes will affect those who manage and operate the golf courses at Carnoustie, though local golfers have been told that their access will continue to be protected. Carnoustie Golf Links Management Committee wants to transfer control to a new body, Carnoustie Golf Heritage and Hospitality Group. This would be for the remainder of the current management agreement with the council, which expires in 2023. CGHS purchased the Carnoustie Golf hotel and spa last year, meaning the golf course and hotel will be operated by one entity. Carnoustie Golf Links Management Committee developed a proposal intending to preserve access for local golfers at a fair price for the long term, while also seeking to maintain Carnoustie's status as a venue for major competitions such as the Open Championship. If successful, the move would bring in millions of pounds of investment for the courses. A public consultation on the proposals was launched earlier this year, and the results were presented to the councillors at a recent full council meeting. The consultation received a mixed response, with a minority of Carnoustie season ticket holders remaining highly sceptical of what the change will mean for them. A total of 199 completed consultation surveys were submitted. The majority of these came from Carnoustie's 2,764 season ticket holders. Less than half of these who took part were in favour of the proposal. Two community organisations responded to the consultation and both expressed support for the economic aim of the proposals. During the committee meeting, Angus Council Finance Director Ian Lorimer admitted that views on the proposal were mixed. However, there's a provisional meeting to discuss this with the council later on in January. Talk on unlikely friendship. In mid-January, there'll be a talk in the guide hall at the Meyer car park in Forfar, and where there'll be an afternoon talk given by Sandra Affleck about the extraordinary friendship between J.M. Barrie and Captain Scott. Sandra, the speaker, has lived in Angus for over 55 years, most of them in Kirriemuir. She's leader of the local history group of Forfar and District U3A, and a member and former president of Strathmore Speakers Club. And some years ago, she, as part of a correspondence course on how to become a writer, she had was asked to write a script for a 30-minute TV documentary about a town. Kirriemuir was the obvious choice, and this began her interest in delving into local history. A few publications ensued, including The Little Red Town and JMB. Consequently, Sir J.M. Barrie became a major interest and remains so. And Sandra's talk will cover just one fragment of Barrie's intriguing life. What may seem like an unlikely friendship between the author of Peter Pan and the Antarctic explorer. Now, this talk is open to everybody, but it's just one of a number of events run all year round by the Angus Members Centre, who are supporters of the National Trust for Scotland. Still Game stars bring show to Montrose Town Hall. Mark Cox and Jane McCarry, best known as Tam and Isa from hit sitcom Still Game, are heading to Montrose in February with their touring production An Evening with Still Game's Mark and Jane. This intimate show promises fans an opportunity to get up close and personal with the pair, who have established themselves as Scottish household names. Promising a night of fun and laughter, Mark and Jane will delve into the lives of their beloved TV characters. Having entertained audiences for 62 episodes across 21 years, the Craigland legends will share stories and secrets from their time in the award-winning show and their individual careers. Concert for Alzheimer's. A group of talented friends gathered together in Arbroath before Christmas to perform a programme of seasonal music for a packed and appreciative audience. The event, In Aid of Alzheimer's Scotland, was held at the Outreach and Administrative Centre, formerly the Oldham Abbey Church Hall. There were soloists, performances, ladies' choir, gentlemen's choir, and the whole company were in fine harmony, filling the room with wonderful songs. The audience were also invited to join in and enjoyed singing along to a few songs. The piano accompanist for the evening was Elaine Greenhill. It was a Christmas concert enjoyed by all. Ticket sales, together with the raffle, meant that a considerable amount of money was raised for Alzheimer's Scotland. And there is a picture too of the choir in full voice. New Council Committee. A new local authority housing committee has been established following the recent approval of Angus Council. The committee will set to work this month and will oversee the council's housing strategy, policy and improvement plans, a remit that includes all housing related matters that were previously overseen by the Communities Committee. To ensure tenants have a voice in shaping housing decisions, three tenant representatives will also be appointed to the committee in a non-voting capacity to bring lived experience and insights to discussions. Constituted tenant groups from across Angus will be invited to nominate individuals by submitting a written request. Nominees must reside with Angus and meet certain specific criteria outlined by the council. The Housing Committee will review nominations and select three representatives, and substitutes are also permitted. Further details about the nomination process will be shared in due course. But it does offer an opportunity for tenants to actively participate in decision-making that impacts on their homes and communities. And the first meeting of the committee that will oversee this remit is on Thursday, the 30th of January, towards the end of this month. And a celebration. Jessie celebrates her 100th. It was open house at Andrew Smythe Gardens in Forfar recently when resident Jessie Kidd celebrated her 100th birthday. The day began with the early arrival of a congratulatory birthday card from Their Majesties the King and Queen. Members of Jessie's family gathered in various times during the course of the day, and the residents of the sheltered complex delivered gifts while the sitting room was a sea of flowers. Deputy Lieutenant Wendy Murray congratulated Jessie in the morning, while her minister, Reverend Malcolm Rooney, visited at midday and Provost Linda Clark in the afternoon. Her son Bob said, "All in all, a long, tiring day for Mum, but a momentous occasion. Thanks for all gifts, cards and good wishes." And there is a very good photograph of the birthday girl surrounded by family and other visitors. Refurbishment underway. The Brothok and Corsair galleries on the first floor of our Broth Library have been closed temporarily to allow for essential refurbishment work. The closure and refurbishment is in preparation for Angus Archives relocation to our Broth Library from their current home in the Hunter Library at Restenis near Forfar, as well as part of wider library renovation plans. Angus Archives are expected to open on the first floor of our Broth Library from next summer. Angus Alive has said that the move will make the archive service more accessible for those who are interested in local and family history in Angus, and it is hoped that this will encourage more visitors. Once the archive move is complete, the artworks on display from Angus collections will again be available to view in the gallery space. Craig Pearson, Archives and Libraries Operational Lead, said, "We understand that the temporary closure of the galleries may cause inconvenience. This necessary step allows us to carry out the extensive work required to prepare for the arrival of Angus Archives at Arbroath Library. Once complete, the space will reopen as a hub for Angus's rich cultural collection, offering an inspiring space for all to enjoy. The library will remain open as normal, so anyone can go in and take books out and use it for other reasons." And we'll finish off with a little bit on sport. Competition for places is required, says Gaffer. Forfar Athletic boss Jim Weir admits his squad needs a bit of freshness as the club looks to get off the bottom of League Two. Despite only losing one of their last four games, a 2-2 draw at home to Stirling Albion on Saturday, it leaves them 4 points behind Bonnyrigg Rovers and Stranraer. We're told Forfar Athletic TV, "I think we've scored something like 11 goals in 5 games, but conceded 9. So it's clear why we've not picked up as many points as I would like." Brechin City stay ahead in Highland League. Brechin City maintained their 2-point lead at the top of the Highland League with a 5-1 win away to Huntly. Dale Robertson was the hat-trick hero as City got back to winning ways following their draw at Fraserburgh. City have no game until the 11th of January when they have a trip to Deverndale. They know they have to keep picking up points, with Brora Rangers lurking in second place with a superior goal difference. Meanwhile, the supporters group meeting in conjunction with Brechin Community Football Trust took place at the City Club at Glebe Park. The guest speaker was former defender and cult hero Jerry McLaughlin, who made over 100 appearances in 2 spells with the club. tennis, a season of success for tennis clubs. December was a fruitful month for Angus tennis clubs as they picked up 10 Tennis Tayside Division trophies. Meanwhile, two former Montrose Tennis Club champions reached the quarterfinals of the Tennis Scotland Tour Finals. One of them, Cameron Fryer, also won the award for the most supporting male player on the national tour. Montrose won in seven divisions, while Arbroath won were against, again, Tayside Mixed Doubles champions. And David Lloyd Dundee in Monifieth won two division titles. In addition, Cameron and Patrick Young qualified for the field of 16 in the Tennis Scotland Tour Finals in Glasgow and won their opening matches before losing to seeds. Both play for Stirling University and were on the North of Scotland county team that placed third in the top division in British County Week this summer. In addition, Sarah Simpson won the award as best performing player in Division 1 of the Junior League, a rare feat for a girl in the mixed sex league. And there's a picture of Sarah with her certificate, and she certainly looks very pleased with herself.
Hello, this is Sheila McIntosh here, and I'm reading from the Angus County Press, dated Thursday, 9th of January, 2025. This is the first newspaper of 2025, and I'd like to wish all of you a very healthy and happy year. On the front page, there's a picture of four women, obviously in lovely sunshine and wearing sunglasses, and the title is Challenge of a Lifetime. In an article by Mark Dowie, an Arbroath woman is set to take on the challenge of a lifetime as she and a team of friends prepare to undertake one of the world's most arduous rowing events. In December this year, Nikki Matthews will be part of the first all-female Scottish crew to row across the Atlantic Ocean. And, as if this challenge was not daunting enough, the crew will be undertaking the trip with no backup boat. The journey, covering 3,000 nautical miles, is part of the world's toughest row, which requires crew to navigate the ocean's notoriously difficult sea and weather conditions unsupported. The team will be responsible for their own safety, repair work, navigation and supplies. Nikki and her teammates, Andrina McShane-Kerr from Glasgow, Heather McCallum from Dunoon and Fiona Deacon from Cromarty, will also raise funds for four charities in the process. They have chosen to support environmental charity Andrina, Simba, the Scottish charity Air Ambulance, and the local Royal RNLI, including the Arbroath branch, which Nikki chose in honour of her late father, who was a member of the RNLI. The journey ahead is daunting and the possible problems many and varied. Leaving from Gomera in the Canary Islands on December the 12th, they will aim to arrive in Antigua 50 days later. Nikki said, "We're excited and nervous, but ready for the challenge ahead. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and we can't wait to be part of such a massive event." Despite the tough conditions, the crew is eager to undertake their incredible adventure. For details on how to donate, visit Facebook at Scotland The Wave. Instagram is at Scotland The Wave. Twitter is at Scotland The Wave. Or email scotlandthewave@gmail.com. Also in news, it's an article about concerns over flu numbers. Newly published data from Public Health Scotland show that flu activity continues to rise steeply in Scotland, including an increase in flu-related GP consultations and hospital admissions. There are early indications that high levels of circulating flu are contributing to acute pressure on the health and care system. Vaccination is one of the best tools we have in protecting against serious illness from flu. If you're eligible for a flu or COVID-19 vaccine, it's not too late to take up the offer and get protected. Check with your local health board for details on how to arrange this. If you have symptoms of flu or have a fever, you should stay at home and avoid contact with other people. An interesting article here about heart start discovery. Heartstart Discovery is running 3 2-hour training sessions in emergency life support for members of the public later this month. Being able to perform emergency life support, that's ELS, a set of actions needed to keep someone alive until professional help arrives, gives the casualty the best possible chance of survival. Courses are free of charge and no medical knowledge is required in order to undertake one. It only takes 2 hours to learn the skills, which may save a life, and it's also very likely the person you help may be a family member or someone close to you. For further details and to register, call Helen Brady on 07 864 513 742 or email Helen, Helen Brady at NHS Scotland, or send a message to www.facebook.com/heartstartdiscovery. In a news article by Mark Dowie, the National Farmers Union will join with the NFU, Cymru and Ulster Farmers Union on Saturday, January the 25th, for a nationwide day of action. The day's events will continue to highlight the UK government's proposed changes to inheritance tax and the threat to the viability of family farms across the UK. It will also thank the public for its growing support. While the activity taking place all across the different parts of the UK is likely to differ, the union says the key message is exactly the same. Unless the UK government halts its family farm tax proposals, they will damage and threaten family farms and in turn undermine UK food production. A music article here. The Swing Show coming to Arbroath and Dundee venues. Fans of Swing will be in for a treat when The Story of Swing will play at Arbroath's Webster Theatre this month and at the Whitehall Theatre in Dundee in February. Presented by award-winning vocalist and world-class trumpet player Gareth John and featuring the SOS Big Band, The Story of Swing takes audiences on a musical journey through decades of the iconic genre of swing and big band music. Featuring the classics, much-loved hits of Bobby Darin, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr., right through to modern-day crooners such as Michael Bublé, Robbie Williams, Matt Goss, Paul Anka and Harry Connick Jr. The show will be staged at the Webster Theatre on January the 19th and at the Whitehall Theatre on Saturday, February the 8th. In another news article, the 2025 Race for Life in Dundee opens for entries. In an article by Mark Dowie, broadcaster and DJ Adele Roberts is urging locals to kickstart their new year by signing up for the Cancer Research UK Race for Life in Dundee. The charity's much-loved events, which raise funds for life-saving research, are returning to the city in June, and anyone who joins in January can claim 50% off the entry fee as part of a special early bird sale by using the code RACE25NY. Every year, around 34,600 people are diagnosed with cancer in Scotland. Money raised at Race for Life events enables scientists to find new ways to prevent, diagnose and treat cancer. Entries are open now for a bumper day of Race for Life at Camperdown Park, Dundee on Sunday, June the 15th. Now, in focus on our growth, there's a really good clear picture of a gentleman called Kenny Freeburn, an Arbroath man who leads Scottish Ambulance Service operations in the east of Scotland, has been awarded the King's Ambulance Service Medal in the New Year's Honour List. With 30 years service, Kenny Freeburn, Regional Director for the East, who oversees nearly 1,500 staff, has received a prestigious honour which acknowledges ambulance personnel who have shown exceptional devotion to duty, merit and conduct. In focus on Forfar, Articles from the SWI, the Scottish Women's Institute, Padanaram SWI's December meeting took place in the Royal Hotel Forfar, where 14 members all enjoyed a lovely meal. The birthday cake was baked and decorated by Hazel Allen and was duly cut and handed out. Half of it was donated to the Lowson Church Lunch Club, which was also much appreciated. And from Kingsmuir SWI meeting, the President welcomed members and visitors to the recent members of Kingsmuir SWI, which held a distinctive Christmas theme. Anne Elder demonstrated how to make a variety of Christmas wreaths and provided a selection of foliage, berries, ribbon, etc. for everyone to have a go. This resulted in a very busy and enjoyable evening for all. In Focus on Montrose, the Community Council is seeking new members. Perry Den and Craig Community Council is seeking new members to fill three vacancies on the committee. Community councils gather and represent the views of local people to the council and other bodies. They are consulted on planning applications and have one person as their point of contact for all planning matters. Angus currently has 25 community councils. To become a community councillor, you must be at least 16 years old, on the electoral roll, and also resident within the community council area. Anyone interested in getting involved can contact the community council for further information and application forms by emailing ferrydencc@gmail.com. Moving on to sport. An article, Craig returns to Forfar after leaving Arbroath. Craig Slater has left Arbroath to rejoin his former side, Forfar Athletic, on a 2.5-year deal. The 30-year-old moved from Station Park to Gayfield in the summer of 2023 and made 57 appearances. A statement on its Facebook page, Arbroath wrote, "All of us at Arbroath Football Club would like to thank Craig for his contribution during his time at the club, and we wish him well in his new chapter." And also an article about Montrose Football Club, an article by Brian Yule. Montrose has brought in teenager attacking midfielder Callum Sandilands on loan from Hearts until the end of the season. The 19-year-old joined the youth academy at Tynecastle from Rangers in 2021, signing his first professional contract the following year. This season, Sandilands has made 14 appearances for Hearts under-21s in the Lowland League, scoring 6 times and providing 5 assists. His form secured a 3-year contract extension back in October, and he will now continue his development at Lynx Park. Sandilands said, "I'm delighted to be joining the club for the rest of the season. I'm really looking forward to the opportunity and experience and excited about helping drive the team up the league table." Montrose remains 7th in League One and as they head to Cold Rangers this Saturday.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hi, I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
This podcast is all about macular disease. Nearly 1.5 million people in the UK have macular disease, and it affects people of all ages.
Age-related macular degeneration, or AMD, is the most common condition, generally affecting people over the age of 55. AMD is the biggest cause of sight loss in the UK, affecting more than 700,000 people.
Wow, that's a lot of people, isn't it?
It's a lot of people.
Yeah. A group of rare inherited conditions called macular dystrophies can affect much younger people. Some of these rare conditions can appear in childhood, although some are not diagnosed until later life.
We chatted to Carl Harrison, who is the North West England Regional Manager for the Macular Society, and here he explains about the diagnosis of his macular condition.
I have what's known as a macular dystrophy. It's a genetic condition and the name is Stargardt's, and that affects my central vision. You do learn to adapt. I think in the very early days, I think just as much emotionally as well as physically, because there's a lot of information to take in, to absorb and to make sense of. Lots of anxieties, lots of fears, and lots of practical challenges. Could be something simple yet devastating as losing your driving licence, for example. I recall on the day of finally being told, after many years of tests, I drove to Preston Hospital. My wife was with me. She was 8 months pregnant at the time with our first daughter. Drove to the hospital, had some routine tests, which I'd had many, many times before. And at the end of the tests, the ophthalmologist just asked how I was going to get home. So I said, well, I've driven here, I'm driving home. And he said, no, you're not, that's it. You need to surrender your licence. So my reaction, of course, was, you know, you can't do that to me. My job involves travelling around the country doing safety inspections. If you take my driving licence off me, then effectively I'm out of work.
That must have been absolutely devastating.
Mm. I can't even imagine it.
No.
But as Carl went on to explain, not everyone's journey with macula is the same.
Our experiences are not identical. Everybody is individual and we will have similar experiences, but we'll also have completely different experiences. And it's how you react to it, it's how you respond to it. And again, we're all different in that regard. It depends on the support you have around you from right at the early stage and ongoing. It still saddens me today to hear people who are recently diagnosed, whatever their age, that they're diagnosed and that's the end of it. I mean, that was my experience. And I know there's a lot of work taking place now and relationships and partnerships are now developing through lots of different organisations. They're an absolute vital resource, absolutely vital. But of course, you know, we need to understand that sometimes, myself included in the early days, sometimes you don't want that help from those organisations. You know, I'm young, I'm proud and I'm self-sufficient. And if I take that, then no, I'm not. And it took me, I have to confess, it took me a long time to come to terms and even agreeing to becoming registered, the Certificate of Vision Impairment, because I was fearful. I knew that if I were to register, I knew that help would be available, but I was fearful that registering would close more doors than it opened for me at that age. It takes time to realise, actually, you do have an issue here. You've been told you have sight impairment, but, you know, before I was told yesterday, the day before that, I was fine. Now I've been told I'm different. Actually, I'm not. And I do think, especially maybe in the younger people, where you are far more active and there's lots going on in your life and so on, I think just that realisation, yes, that there is a significant, serious issue here. Well, it isn't causing me too much inconvenience at this moment in time. And if I do register, then that's just like putting a flag up, so I've got a vision impairment. And I didn't want that because I still had a career to carve out and years in front of me. But then as you eventually come to terms in your time, in your way, you start to realise, well, this isn't getting better. You start to learn that there is help available. And it just takes one of those moments where actually I could do with one of those for my job. And, well, you can have one. Great. But you need to register.
As Carl suggests in this next piece, there is always a way forward.
Understand, if it's something like Stargardt's, then it's unlikely you're going to lose the whole of your vision. Yes, it's going to worsen. That isn't nice to hear, but it's important to understand, because once you've heard it and you do come to terms with it, at least you're prepared in that sense. So I would say that you're not going to lose your sight if it's Stargardt's, and plan. Think what you want to do. Don't be held back by your condition. Don't let it take over. There is so much help that's out there these days, whether you're registered or not, because you can purchase things directly from suppliers. There's so much help and assistance available. Technology is moving at a tremendous rate. And really, and I honestly believe this, you can really do almost anything you want to do.
I think Carl's last words there are very inspiring, Bob, don't you?
Absolutely.
Setting out some very, very positive advice.
There's always a way forward if you're positively minded.
Yeah.
Next, Carl explains to us what the Macular Society is.
It's an organisation that is keen to support research and eventually beat macular disease. That's the ultimate objective, of course. But we realise that the situation that people are in, there's much need for help and support across a wide range of issues. So some of the more commonly used services, things like the Advice and Information Helpline, we have Gadgets Advisors, so whether those are appliances in the kitchens or whether it's things like a mobile phone or an iPad or using a computer. There's what we call the befriending service, where we can put people in touch with a befriender. So again, anybody who would otherwise be isolated has somebody to talk to, has somebody to share experiences and information with. And we also have befriendees, where we can put people in touch with each other who have similar interests. So that's quite well used. We have research programmes that we're sponsoring, looking into both wet and dry forms of AMD. We have what we call injection buddies. So, of course, people with wet AMD who are on a course of treatment of injections have considerable experience now and are quite used to that process. Others find themselves at the start of that treatment and understandably quite anxious and upset in many cases about the prospect of having eye injections. So with the injection buddies, they can speak to people who understand that situation, who've been through it, and in most cases can actually assure them that the fear is not quite as bad as it seems. It is the fear rather than the actual process itself.
Through the Macular Society, we've learned a great deal about the various types of macular disease, haven't we, Bob?
We have indeed, yeah. The Macular Society is dedicated to finding new treatments for all those who have macular disease. They do this by funding early stage and clinical research into macular diseases. They also work with pharmaceutical companies, providing insight into members' wants and needs.
Currently, for diseases such as dry AMD, Stargardt's disease and more, there are no treatments available, as Carl's already said. But many patients are told when they're diagnosed there's little or nothing to be done to stop the vision loss. This can be disheartening and distressing for patients and for their families.
However, there are many very promising clinical and research studies looking into new treatments for the different types of macular disease. These include studies into wet and dry AMD, Stargardt's disease, myopic macular degeneration, and more.
It's hoped that new techniques such as gene and stem cell therapy will soon lead to treatments to save the sight of everyone with macular disease.
So here are just a few of the research programmes that are being worked on at the moment.
Many people with macular disease live knowing that there's no treatment for them, and the treatments currently available only slow the progression of the disease.
However, stem cell therapy may be able to restore and reverse the sight loss associated with macular disease. Understanding better how to grow photoreceptors from stem cells could be a huge advance for eye disease and stem cell therapy.
Another step forward in research is the use of nanotechnology to investigate whether wet AMD drugs could be delivered through eye drops rather than injections. As the drug has to get from the front of the eye to the back of the eye, this means that there are many barriers the drugs will need to get through.
If successful, this could lead to clinical trials of eye drops as a way to treat wet AMD. This could stop patients needing to go for regular injections and help stop overcrowding of eye clinics. Patients could administer their wet AMD eye drops themselves at home.
That would be so much easier,
wouldn't it? Yeah. And no injections.
Yeah.
This just goes to show how much research and looking at different avenues into finding other ways of helping people with macular diseases is progressing.
Another line of research is the switching off of faulty genes that cause hereditary macular conditions. One faulty copy of the gene in each cell is sufficient for a person to be affected. So by blocking that gene from working, this allows the healthy gene to do its job and keep the eye cells functioning.
ASO therapy is a very new treatment for genetic diseases. If this works, it may lead the way for more treatments for dominantly inherited macular dystrophies, such as Doyne-Honeycomb dystrophy and Stargardt's disease.
An exciting clinical trial is looking into how well magnifying intraocular lens implants could work for those people with vision loss due to macular disease. And if this is successful, it may pave the way for further use, including on the NHS.
Another project aims to use the power of computers and artificial intelligence to better understand age-related macular degeneration, using eye scans from patients with wet and dry AMD, the researchers want to better understand why and how AMD develops and what causes the progression from dry AMD to wet AMD.
In order to find treatments for AMD before sight loss occurs, accurate diagnosis of the earliest signs of AMD need to be found. The Northern Ireland cohort of the Longitudinal Study of Ageing, or NICOLA for short, is a study of around 8,500 people over 50 in Northern Ireland. The study started in 2014 and took eye scans of over 3,000 participants. The NICOLA team now want to follow up with these participants and repeat the eye imaging scans.
This follow-up will allow researchers to find out who has gone on to develop AMD in the last 10 years and try to understand factors that may have contributed to these diseases developing. They hope these scans will also help in finding new markers for early disease to understand what changes are due to aging and what are the first signs of AMD.
A new treatment option for patients with wet age-related macular degeneration is set to become available on the NHS in England. The National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, or NICE, has issued final draft guidance approving Lytenava, the first licensed version of Avastin for wet AMD. Originally developed to treat cancer, this adapted form of Avastin will become the fifth licensed anti-VEGF drug available to treat wet AMD in the UK.
These are just a few of the research developments that are happening and are contributing to a brighter future for those with macular disease.
I think that's amazing.
Absolutely brilliant. When you're told that there's no help for you.
Yeah, and then you realise how much research is actually being done. And they're so close.
They are.
To find out more about macular disease, go to the Macular Society website, where you can find all about the research and lots of other information. The website is www.macularsociety.org. I'll spell that out for you. www.macularsociety.org. They also have a helpline number, which is 0300 30 30 111.
A big thanks to Carl for sharing his experiences and insight into Stargardt's and how the Macular Society can help in so many different ways.
Thank you for listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. So until the next time, from both of us, it's goodbye.
TNS Soundings. TNS Soundings. Features from across the UK.
This is Alastair Hutton with an article written by Heather. The price of a television licence will be increasing in April 2025, adding to the current cost of living problems for many people. So now is a good time to check whether you could be eligible for a discount on your television licence. In April, the cost of a colour TV licence will increase by £5, going up from £169.50 a year to £174.50. The cost of a black and white television licence will rise by £1.50 from £55.50 a year to £57. Before you renew your television licence, it's worth checking if you're in one of the four groups entitled to a discount, a free licence or an exemption. And here's an overview of the four groups. Firstly, free licences can be available if you're aged at least 75 and receive pension credit. Pension credit is a top-up to the state pension for older people on lower incomes. If you're not sure whether you're eligible for pension credit and the free television licence that comes with it, you or a family member can phone the government's pension credit helpline on 0800 991234. I'll give you the number again, 0800 991234. Secondly, for those of you with no sight at all, you can apply for a TV licence exemption under certain circumstances. To qualify for an exemption, you'll need to prove that you use only a digital box that produces sound but cannot display the pictures from television programmes. You'll need to make contact direct with TV licensing to arrange an exemption, for example, by phoning the TV licensing call centre on 0300 790 6096. That number again, 0300 790 6096, and the call centre is open from 8:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday to Friday. Thirdly, if you live in a care home or sheltered accommodation, you may be entitled to pay a discounted fee of £7.50 for your television licence. For this type of licence, you must live in accommodation that has a special type of TV licence, such as a care home, supported housing, or sheltered accommodation. In addition, this discount is restricted to people who are disabled or aged over 60 and who work for no more than 15 hours a week. To check whether you qualify for this type of discount, you'll need to speak to the manager at your home or housing complex to find out if they have an ARC, that's an Accommodation for Residential Care licence. And last, but not least, if you or someone in your household is severely sight impaired, you can apply for a 50% discount on your TV licence. The 50% discount applies to both colour and black and white TV licences and is available to all age groups. If you think you qualify for the 50% discount, you'll need to contact TV licensing and provide a copy of one of the following to prove that you are severely sight impaired. The options are a certificate of visual impairment, often known simply as a CVI, a BD8 certificate, a certificate or document issued by a local authority, a copy of a certificate from an ophthalmologist or eye surgeon, tax coding notice from HMRC showing you receive blind person's allowance, a copy of your national registration card signed by an ophthalmologist. If you're in the Isle of Man, you could use DHSS documentation or certificate, and if you live in Northern Ireland, you could use Health and Social Services documentation or a letter from an optometrist. You can find out more about how to apply for a 50% discount online at tvlicensing.co.uk, or you can telephone the TV Licensing Call Centre on 0300 790 6096. That number again, 0300 790 6096, and the call centre is open from 8:30 in the morning to 6:30 p.m. Monday to Friday.
TNS Soundings. TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz from East Kilbride here. I'm looking today at Betty Ford, wife of President Gerald Ford of the United States of America. Now, not many First Ladies have a greater legacy than their husbands, but perhaps our Betty has that greater legacy. So I hope that's made you inclined to keep listening. She was born Betty Bloomer. Now, there's a name to conjure up all sorts of images. in Chicago in 1918. Her mother was from a wealthy family and decided that her daughter should have social graces. So what better way to acquire those than to send your wee girl along to dancing school? Betty loved this. She didn't only love it, she had a great talent. Tap, ballet, country dancing, you name it, it was a joy of her early life. So good, in fact, that she attended a summer school run by the famous American dancer Martha Graham, who then invited the teenage Betty to go along to the New York Center for the Dancing. And this early life of dancing gave her a legacy for her days always. Music and dancing was always an escape from pressure. Perhaps her most famous event during this dancing career was to dance at Carnegie Hall. By this time, she was about 20, a beauty with the poise and the character of hard work getting new places. But her mother was saying, this is not a fit employment or a fit career for Betty. So she came back to her hometown and she started work in a department store. First of all, modelling the clothes, then selling the clothes, and was then fortunate to become the manager of one of the large department stores. This wasn't enough for Betty. So in her spare time, she started a dancing school. Her dancing school was very unique in the area because it not only encouraged dancers from the African American community, she also ran classes for boys and girls with additional learning needs and with sight difficulties. So there's an early indication of her social conscience. A man had been in the scene. In fact, he'd been in the scene for many years. He was a travelling salesman, and he seemed to be the man for her. Well, at least he seemed to be the man for her at that time. And she had already been through several tragedies in her family. Her father had apparently had an accident with carbon monoxide poisoning in a closed garage. You know what that may mean, but nothing was ever proved. And that may be a part of the reason she decided to accept the marriage proposal from William Warren. She had known him for many years and he offered her marriage. But after a couple of years, it was clear it was not the marriage that Betty sought. They were travelling around so much, she didn't feel this was the man to be the father of children and to offer her stability. She decided there should be a divorce. It was to be amicable. And in that very month, Warren became seriously ill. And Betty actually postponed any thoughts of leaving him and stayed in the marriage and nursed the man for 2 years. Until he was well again. But she was determined that the marriage should end, and it did. 1 year after that first marriage had failed, Betty met a very handsome US Navy lieutenant who was also early days in his law practice. And he told Betty that not only did he love her and he wanted to marry her, but he planned to run for US Congress. This was Gerald Ford, always called Jerry by our Betty. Now, he was already a very ambitious politician, but he was a very savvy politician, and he was a bit concerned that some of his conservative-minded potential voters, remember this was in the 40s, 1940s, might not want to vote for him if they knew his new wife was not only a divorced woman, but also an ex-dancer. I mean, it screams all sorts of immorality, doesn't it? Well, in those days it did. So the marriage was quite quiet, but then she was immediately thrown into the wife of a political person. He missed the wedding rehearsal the day before because of a rally, and he missed the first day of their honeymoon because of another rally. Well, this didn't seem to delay Betty's devotion to Gerald, and it didn't stop the voters voting him in. And he became a long-term member of Congress. Betty moved all her world to Washington. She became the classic homemaker of the 1950s. Rearing four children, Jerry was away for weeks, months on end, a political career. Betty grew to know about the complexities of Washington life. She networked, but she also ran children's groups, Cub Scouts, raised four children, and that was her world. Perhaps physical comfort, yes, but I think emotionally very alone. I think feeling very overwhelmed at times with four active children, and then a significant event. From nowhere one day, she had a dreadful pain at her back. It was decided by the doctor that it was a trapped nerve. Take the painkillers, Betty. And that's what Betty did. And she kept taking the painkillers. And the pain didn't get any better, and she just took more painkillers. By the decades after he'd been in the Congress, it was clear to Gerald Ford that his wife was dependent on these painkillers. He promised her that he would retire from politics after those decades of her devotion to the family and to his career. And then what happened? Gerald Ford was caught up in the political horror of President Nixon, Spiro Agnew, and the Watergate scandal. Gerald Ford found himself appointed vice president, and then when Nixon had to resign, Gerry Ford became president of the United States. She described it as the saddest day of my life. What impact was this going to have on Jerry? Profoundly more work, more anxiety. What impact on Betty? She announced she would go into the White House, but she would be her own woman. And that was her plan, to be strong, to be independent, to be capable. And 6 weeks after he was elected and then placed into that presidency by President Nixon, Betty found a lump, a breast lump. The diagnosis was that she had cancer and she needed a full mastectomy. She was her own woman. Very unusually, but totally supported by Gerry Ford, Betty went public. She announced a diagnosis. She announced the treatment was a mastectomy. The photographs were taken of her in her room, looking calm and determined and well and smiling. And the public impact across America was perhaps shock at first, but then an overwhelming wave of support and indeed love. In fact, the year after Gerald Ford went into the White House, our Betty was voted the Woman of the Year. She continued to speak out on causes that mattered to her. Equal rights for women, fairer treatment during divorce, support of families. One of her wonderful wee sayings is, being a lady does not require silence, and she was not a silent woman. Then Gerald Ford, of course, had to be elected by the people of the United States. Betty, not in great health, campaigned strongly for Gerald Ford. She was actually more popular than Gerald Ford, and people would wear badges saying, vote for Betty's husband, keep Betty in the White House. But to no avail. Gerald Ford was defeated and once again the prospect for her was he would be at home, they would be together. He and the rest of the family had noticed the pills were perhaps reduced, but the alcohol had taken an even greater hold on Betty's life. Perhaps the toll of being in the White House was showing itself in that way. The family staged an intervention. She was angry at first, but accepted that was the path for her. She needed help. She needed professional help, and she committed to it. Committed to it so wholeheartedly that she entered group therapy sessions, stayed away from her family for months, and at the end of it all, she decided that she could claim she had triumphed over these addictions. Very simply, she said, "I think that I made up my mind that I was allergic to alcohol. And that's what I learned. It made sense to me. You know, if you were allergic to strawberries, you wouldn't eat strawberries. So it all made sense to me." What did she do? She realised that she had healed herself, but her public situation meant that as well as the news of the mastectomy diagnosis, which had led to a huge increase of women seeking advice from doctors, her public statements about her worries could also help others. And that's why in 1982, after 4 years of sobriety, she helped to begin what was the Betty Ford Non-Profit Centre for those with prescription drugs and with alcohol dependency. This place has become a centre of healing. It has become well known because of the numerous celebrities that have gone through its doors, including Elizabeth Taylor, Liza Minnelli, Johnny Cash. But that's only a fraction of the people, men and women, who have been helped by the Betty Ford Centre. And I think beyond that, it's the message that Betty Ford has sent. If you have worries, you have to tackle them. If you have worries, you need support of others. And above all, you keep going. Another of her wonderful sayings, "It's not about how many times you fall down. It's about how many times you get back up." And here's what was said about Betty only this year when she was put on an American postage stamp. "Heroism is not perfection. It is resilience. Ultimately, Betty Ford gave us hope." And I think those words just fit Betty Ford.
TNF Soundings.